This is episode 2.
It's all about Jack now anyway.
Jack's story.
Hey, I'm Jack Draper, ATP pro and winner of 4 challenger titles in 2022. Time.
Hi, this is Laura Robson, former tennis player. I'm still getting used to saying that.
Big forehand winner. What a talent she is.
Centre Court celebrates its centenary this summer, and we're hoping to give you a flavour of what it's like to watch and compete at the most famous tennis stadium in the world.
Alfie Hewitt adds yet another Grand Slam title to his expanding collection. Great hands at the net. What a point from the teenager, Jack Draper.
Subscribe now for the whole series and feel the connection this summer with Vodafone, official partner of Wimbledon.
Memories of Centre Court Wimbledon. Good for the podcast.
So here we are together again, Jack and Alfie.
Hi, Laura.
Hey, how you doing?
So, Jack, this episode's all about you.
Hello.
We'll start off, you must be gutted to have missed Roland Garros, considering what your form was as well a couple of weeks ago in Madrid.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think I've been fortunate enough the last sort of 8 months to stay on court and not be injured. I think that's one of the biggest things as a tennis player, staying injury-free, especially as you go up the levels. But I just got a bit unfortunate this time. I sort of hurt myself in the gym, and just small tweak in the leg, and that's enough to sort of put you out of high competitive tennis. So it's all right now, and I'm preparing for the grass.
Yeah, especially best of five as well. You want to know that you're physically ready to go into that. And we should say that we're recording this before the French Open wheelchair event. Alfie's top seed, but we know that you won in Barcelona, so congratulations for that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a bit of a fan when it comes to the clay. I think this was the first doubles title in 7 years that I've won that hasn't been with Gordon. So that was a bit of a strange feeling. But hopefully he'll be back. He's had a bit of an injury issue recently with his wrist, and the summer was a little bit in doubt. So it's looking all good from his side, and we'll be able to get back out there, and we're looking forward to it. But grass is around the corner, like Jack said. It's a great time of year to be playing tennis, isn't it?
Indeed. Let's get on with the pod.
Brilliant from Hewitt. He generates such speed across the court, mixing it with the very best out here.
So Jack, this one's all about you. Let's go back to the beginning.
Hello.
What's your earliest tennis memory? And you come from a tennis family as well.
Earliest tennis memory. I think my mum taking me to the local tennis centre at the time, which was Sutton Tennis and Squash. I was born in Sutton. And I think just sort of playing with guys who are a bit older than me and realising I could actually play pretty well. I think being in that environment where you're in a little bit of a squad and you're playing around the world, you're paying points, and you're sort of realising that love for the game you have, I think that's probably my earliest tennis memory.
And you got big your mum up as well, junior national champ.
Yeah, exactly. No, she was a very good player when she was younger, for sure.
And of course, your dad worked for Sport England and then obviously was a big part of the LTA as well. Do you feel like it was sort of ingrained in you to be a tennis player?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely comes from my mum's side. It's my mum's mum's brother who is the one who sort of got the whole tennis thing going. But I think I was very lucky that both my parents and my brother, who's a bit older, could play. So whenever I wanted to go and have a little hit, I could just ask one of them and I'd go.
Alfie, are you from a sporty family?
Not at all, no. There's absolutely no tennis history in my family whatsoever. So I'm a bit of a trendsetter in the Hewitt clan.
I like that.
It's not really inspired anyone at the moment to get involved. I think my brother, he plays about 2 weeks after Wimbledon because he's obviously watched it for a little bit and thinks he can get on a court and play like Rafa. But once he realised that football's more of a sport, he sort of gives up and sticks to that.
And I feel like it in tennis as well, there tends to be one specific tennis parent as well, who's always the one that comes to the tournaments, who's sort of more invested in your training. For me, that was my mum. Is that your mum as well?
I think so, yeah. I think it's my mum's very, very intrigued by the whole tennis thing.
She gets nervous when she watches.
Yeah, especially now that I'm playing challengers, I'm not too sure how I feel about it, because at the Futures, they can't watch anything, so they don't know what's happened in the match. They don't know if you've been really badly behaved. They don't know about any of these things. But then playing the challengers, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I win a match and I'm on the
streaming
phone, like, I did great.
Everything.
And she's like, well, you broke a racket. You know, like, she's she gets very nervous about a few of those things, especially it might be a bit laggy, the connection and all that, and the score might be ahead on your phone, but you're watching it and you don't know what's going on. Yeah, she says to me she gets very nervous. Hyperventilating is the word she used last time.
My dad, when he used to watch me at Wimbledon, and he's not the tennis parent, so he never came to really any tournaments because he always worked, but he had this backpack that he'd have it in front of him, and if I won the point, he'd have to unzip the backpack, take a sip of water, put it back, and then zip the bag back up. That was like his superstition. And the year that he did it every match was the year that I did well. So he was like, well, obviously it was because of me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think parents are so funny when they watch on the side.
It is amazing. I remember a tournament when I was younger, actually, but I think it was under 12 or so. And there was this guy who used to play a lot in the tournaments when I was younger, and obviously not saying their names, but when I'd play him, I think when his dad was on the side and he'd get very superstitious, it seemed, he'd have penny coins and he'd put like five out every time he won a point. And if he lost one, he'd put two coins out or something like this. So it's like a ritual, like every point. The parents clearly get very involved and very nervous, it seems.
Okay.
Yeah, a bit random.
Yeah. And I actually didn't know this about you. You were at Chelsea Academy for a short time.
Yeah.
What year was that?
Very short time. I think it was from when I was 10 to 12. I remember the first time I went, because I could play decent football when I was younger. You know, now I barely play anymore because of the tennis, so I'm not very good anymore. But I remember rocking up on my first day with a Manchester United shirt on, and they weren't too happy about that. So that got quickly changed.
You got any claim to fame?
What do you mean?
Like, was there anyone in the academy that you were playing with back then that has now gone on and made it?
Nah, I don't think so. I mean, at that age, you're not really like, I don't know, listening out to loads of names or whatever, but I remember sort of being a part of the academy there and seeing how a different sport worked. And it was definitely very different being a part of like a sort of team as opposed to being individual. I think that's what maybe drew me more to the tennis in the end.
Did you ever feel like you had to make a decision whether it was tennis or football?
I think naturally just that individual nature of tennis drew me to it in the end, and it wasn't like a big decision because at that age as well I was still sort of going to school and I was still playing. I remember the one thing probably made me go to the tennis more was the fact that when I used to play football I used to, you know, roll my ankle more and get injured more, and so it was like if I wanted to carry on with the tennis I had to stop the football really.
So when we talk about families, do you think it matters if there's a background in the family name, whether there's been a history beforehand or not?
I think everyone's got different case. Everyone's got a different journey. I know of loads of players, yourself. Obviously, I think Paul Jubb doesn't really come from a tennis background. He's one of our top players. And I can think of many others. I mean, obviously, I think it maybe does help a little bit if your family's from tennis. But I think everyone's got a different story.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And especially when it's such a international sport as well. I think in Britain in particular, it is quite expensive because the weather is not ideal and you have to play indoors. And then that's when the costs really start adding up when you're trying to get into it as a junior. But I think, you know, other countries, you see so many backgrounds, so many, you know, ways that people have gone into tennis. And there's so many different routes as well. You know, people going to college now is a big thing in the States, and then turning pro when they feel like it's the right time. So it's not a sport where I feel like there's a time limit on it anymore, because it used to be, you know, if you're not good by 18, then that's not going to be your career. But now it's like you could be 27, 28 peaking for the first time.
Yeah, exactly. I think that whole young has changed to being a bit older in terms of when you're at your peak in tennis, and the longevity of the sport, I think, over the years has changed a lot as well.
And we touched on your centre court memories in episode one. You were there for Murray Djokovic in 2013, and you've had a couple of big matches that you were there for. Would you say that that's the one that really sticks out for you?
Yeah, I think seeing Andy win that kind of title, I think that will always stick in my memory as a massive moment. I think the last game was incredibly long. I think the tension within the place, I think he was 40 love up. And then it went juice and all the rest of it. And the tension at that time, I remember I think Djokovic missed the backhand on match point. And it was just a massive, I think it was an emotional moment for everyone, because I think everyone knew the emotions that he'd gone through, losing so many finals at Grand Slams in big arenas and all the hard work he's done. And I think to see that was amazing. And I remember after the match sort of walking up the hill to the car, and there was just a big party atmosphere, and it was, yeah, it was an amazing moment.
How good's your memory?
It's scary.
This is a joke. I feel like I remember the match, but not that well, and I remember, you know, it was such a big moment in British sport, but I don't know if I was recalling people's backhands missed and what serve he hit at match point.
No, I think I could tell you sort of point by point, but that'd be too that would be too long. So I'll probably lay off that. But yeah,
I think amazing. I think Jack could write an autobiography already.
Yeah, of memories of Centre Court Wimbledon. Good for the podcast.
Watch out, world! Jack Draper really is a player on the rise.
So that Andy Murray moment that you mentioned, was that a massive inspiration for you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think especially as someone who probably didn't know anything about the pro game at the time, didn't know if I was going to be a good player myself, sort of gave me a massive drive and motivation of, oh, this is what it could be like for me one day. I think as you sort of get into the pros, you realise how much of a minefield it is and how many great players there are. So it makes it seem like it's not as possible. But I think definitely, like, going up the rankings now, I'm starting to believe in myself a little bit more that I can create those sort of moments. But we'll have to see. But yeah, that memory of Andy and the motivation and the sort of buzz that gives to so many young players, I think, was massive.
Back to the pod in just a minute. First, this is Tim Henman, excited to be teaming up with Vodafone this summer. It's going to be a great Wimbledon, particularly the chance to discover Wimbledon Uncovered in 360 for the first time, powered by Vodafone and available on wimbledon.com. We're also working with the LTA and Wimbledon to support young British tennis talent through Play Your Way to Wimbledon, powered by Vodafone. Perhaps one day you'll make it all the way to Centre Court. Follow Vodafone's social channels to keep up with the best of the action and look out for special guest appearances. That's it from me. Now back to Laura, Alfie and Jack.
Welcome back. I'm Laura Robson. I'm here with Alfie Hewitt and Jack Draper.
Hey, I'm Jack Draper.
In association with Vodafone. We've talked about your tennis family and seeing these iconic moments when you were younger, and not too long after that, you're competing there yourself in the juniors.
Yeah, exactly. I remember actually, I know Alfie touched on sort of court three before, and I remember playing my semi-final, the juniors.
I remember that match.
Yeah, it was amazing really, because I'd played the juniors, I played in the other Grand Slams, and I think I'd lost sort of seven first rounds or something. And then my coach Ryan said, look, every time you play the juniors, you completely bottle it. So you've got to, after this tournament, we'll maybe take you out of the juniors and go more into the pro. And I remember playing at Wimbledon, being quite tight, but I was quite free in those junior matches. And I remember playing the semi-final on court three, and it was, I think, 19-17 in the fifth after sort of 4 hours, 37 minutes.
In the fifth?
Sorry, not in the third. What am I talking? It felt like a fifth set.
It was just as long.
Yeah, it was. It was. But that was amazing to play the juniors, and I think court one as well. When I played the final, I didn't think anyone would show up, and then some of my friends said it was like sold out before I went on, and I was sort of looking at it in the changing rooms, thinking, like, oh, not sure if I could go out here. But no, that was an amazing memory as well.
How difficult is that transition from juniors to seniors on grass then?
Yeah, I think so. I think from the juniors, you just naturally over those couple of years get a bit stronger, so you're able to deal with it a little bit more, and also going through the futures and stuff like that. I don't think the highest level of juniors to the futures, it isn't much difference. But then when you get to the futures and challenges, it becomes less again to the top of the game. But I think, yeah, all those experiences sort of coming up through the juniors and start of the pros definitely helped me to sort of compete at a higher level.
I also think that that's something that's really specific to Wimbledon, is how much people get behind the juniors. Because all the other junior Grand Slams that I've played, they were sort of empty. And even the finals and stuff, they're on the big courts, but I mean, there's about 10 people watching. Whereas I feel like Wimbledon is always pretty packed out, and especially if it's a Brit who's doing well, like you were in the semis. I remember watching it at home, and there was obviously big matches on centre and one, and I was like, well, no brainer, I'm going to watch Jack.
Yeah, no, I think in the juniors it was weird, because up to that point, I think I'd had zero people watching me apart from my coach or my family and stuff, and then going and play those matches at Wimbledon where you're all of a sudden on a bit of a stadium court when people are watching. I think I play on court 12 as well, and more people are out there. It's a good experience for younger players to have to deal with that, because I think as you get better and as you get older, you're going to have to deal with that more often.
Did you meet anyone good that year?
What, in the juniors?
Yeah, just like any celebs, any big names around?
I did, actually. I think you're trying to test me here, actually. I met...
How's your memory?
Duchess of Cambridge.
Is oh, did right? you? It yeah. wasn't a test, but oh, right. that's a,
thought,
that's a good answer.
I thought you sort of knew and you were asking me if I remembered, testing my memory out there. No, I'd met the Duchess of Cambridge, I think the day before my final. They came around and they spoke to some of the finalists and the players for the next day and sort of asked a few questions. So that was probably the celebs I met that week.
Have you got a good one, Alfie? Who's the most famous person you've met at Wimbledon?
I think one of my first Wimbledons, it was the middle Saturday when they had all the celebs in. And I remember coming into the grounds, I think it was Bradley Cooper. And I'd literally just finished watching like the trilogy of the Hangover. I just remember like walking in, there was Bradley Cooper. And then I think another year, Lewis Hamilton. I think Drake was there one year as well,
yeah.
I want to say.
He shut down the whole upstairs of the players area and all of his bodyguards. Only allowed, I think, about 3 pitches total. And all the players, especially the juniors and stuff, were just lurking by the stairs trying to get a look at him.
So to be like in the surrounding areas of those guys who are obviously absolute celebrities, yeah, it's pretty cool, pretty awesome.
What about yourself? Any big celebrities?
I've had some good ones over the years, and I have to go with the Queen. I mean,
okay.
Yeah.
That I don't sort of trumps name everyone's answer there.
I don't want a name job, but yeah, the Queen is probably my best one. And I met Beckham, you know, I did meet Drake that year and Justin Timberlake and a few others. But I mean, the Queen is the Queen, so.
Yeah, I don't think we're beating that, Alfie.
Sorry, guys.
Excellent serve from Draper.
I made my centre court debut.
Follows it up with his left-handed forehand.
In 2021 against Novak Djokovic.
And there's the volley. Great hands at the net. What a point from the teenager, Jack Draper.
So 3 years later, age 19, you've opened centre court with your first round against Djokovic.
Mm.
How was that whole experience? And if you could kind of do anything different this year, if you were to play him again, what would it be?
Yeah, I think I spent a lot of time sort of injured last year before I was playing on the grass, and I did pretty well at Queen's, but I was still struggling a little bit with my body. So going into that match, I wasn't entirely confident in my tennis ability that I could do some real damage. But obviously went out there and sort of played within the moment, and I think I won the first set. Well, I definitely won the first set, and then it ran away from me a little bit. I think he sort of showed his class and showed why he's a top champion. I think you don't really realise it at the time when you're playing tennis. You're always looking on to the next thing. And I think as any sports athlete, you want to do your best at the moment. But I think when I look back now, I can appreciate a bit more the fact that I got that opportunity at 19 to open centre court playing him. And it gives me a lot of, you know, a lot of excitement going into the next sort of 10 years. Hopefully I'll be able to do it many more times.
And was there anything that you did differently knowing that you were going to play on centre when the draw came out as he was defending champ compared to how you would prepare for playing on an outside court?
Was there anything I did differently, or would I do anything differently?
Both.
Was it? No, I think at that time I was sort of trying to figure out what was going on.
Because centre court, it's one of the only stadium courts where you can't practice on it beforehand as well.
Yeah,
so you don't
exactly.
really get a feel for how it's going
to
be.
I'd probably, if I was to do it again, I may show up sort of 5 minutes later, so I'm not waiting around and getting cold before the match. But I suppose...
Did you go out there and have a look at all before?
I did. And I think the groundsman wouldn't let me on the court or something. So it was kind of quite tough to sort of go out there straight away. But I always think with bigger courts, the court looks smaller. But actually, when I went out on the centre court, I realised that it looked quite big, which was a bit of a weird one for me. But I don't think I would have done anything different, to be honest.
So you talk about, you know, the pre-match nerves and the build-up to it. You went out there and you won the first set, mate. How did you manage that?
Yeah, no, like I've always felt like I've dealt with nerves pretty well. I surprised myself in a way. Like I always think, oh, like how am I going to be able to deal with it, especially when I play the juniors. But when I get out there, I'm pretty confident in my ability that I can beat anyone. I mean, when I played Madrid recently, I played Rublev, and there was never a thought where it's like I can't win this match. I always think whoever I'm playing, they've got two arms, two legs, and I'm gonna compete as hard as I can and show them that I'm not here as a rollover. I'm here to play. So yeah, I think I just took it from there and I managed to nick the first set, and then after that was a bit different.
And you both must get the ticket requests when they come in. People you haven't spoken to in 5 to 10 years will send you a message. Have you got any tickets for me? Is that a bit annoying? Is it frustrating?
Yeah.
Must have had lots last year.
Yeah, I think I had a lot of that. And then I had a few where I think it was immediately after I'd played, they were saying, oh, come to the pub in Wimbledon. And I was thinking, right, I'm not going to rock up to the pub in my all whites and, you know, just start having a few beers in front of, you know, I'm not going to do that. So
Unless you're Kyrgios,
that is. But yeah, you always get a few people coming out of the woodworks asking for tickets and that. And I don't know, maybe, I don't know, it's just me, but I try and stay off my phone as well, so I don't have to worry about any of those things.
Did your social media blow up?
A little bit. I think my followers definitely grew. That's the other thing. It sort of gives you a bit more of a limelight in that moment to sort of show what your personality and your tennis ability. So I think on that point, not as much. I think that does when you win those matches, right? But I think still being young and maybe not coming through that match or whatever, it's less so.
And having had the taste for it last year, is that, it probably always has been, but is that your one goal to win Wimbledon?
Yeah, I think it becomes, when you first enter the pros and you go to the futures and the challenges, you get a bit mixed up. It doesn't seem like a reality because you're at the bottom of the pit and it's so tough to get up to the top of the game. But I think now as I'm approaching a bit of a higher level, I'm starting to believe in myself a lot more, that goals of mine, which were when I was a kid, now are a little bit more possible. So I think I just stick to my process, work hard every day, and we'll see what happens. I'm not putting too much pressure on myself to do any of those things.
Looking ahead to Queens, that's where you first got your couple of big ATP wins last year. Do you feel like that's where you first got that momentum going, where you feel like you believe you're in the mix?
Yeah, definitely. I think there is a bit of that where it's like, I think beating Sinner and Bublik last year was the first time I've beaten two top 50 players. And even though I'm very lucky enough to hit with Cam Norrie, Andy Murray, Dan Evans, all those kind of guys on a regular basis here at the NTC, I think it definitely gave me a belief, because obviously the match is a different ball game altogether. So to get those wins was good. I think more than anything, though, winning on the grass court may be a bit different to the hard and the clay, but it definitely gave me a lot of motivation and excitement that, you know, this is where I can be one day. And it's weird that that's a year ago now. So hopefully going into this year, I can show everyone how much I've improved.
Thanks for listening to episode 2. Subscribe for a new show every Wednesday in the lead up to Wimbledon. And feel the connection this summer with Vodafone, official partner of Wimbledon. This is a 94-19 production in association with Vodafone.